Okay.
Welcome to another Triathica podcast. I've got Jim Herkimer. 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 Okay. See, I butchered it already.
That's all right.
Jim is a physical therapist, and you probably have other credentials, and we'll learn about those. But you've got a physical therapy practice here in Southern California.
Yes.
And other stuff. And the thing that I remember most about your practice is it's called SCAR. It's like, wow, that's kind of a grim sort of name, but what does SCAR stand for?
SCAR stands for Sports Conditioning and Rehabilitation. And kind of an interesting side note, SCAR was the first Nautilus Center on the West Coast.
Really?
In the early 70s.
Wow.
And my wife, Michelle, and I are the third owners of SCAR. And I was actually a member there in 1976.
Huh.
And it was the sports medicine place, you know, if you got hurt, you went to SCAR. I mean, that was just it. That was the deal. And when we decided to move into SCAR and kind of take over the process, our goal was to return it to the sports medicine center of excellence for our community.
Huh.
So that kind of, with that came a really, expanding role into, you know, multiple areas of sports medicine. You know, especially with the changing healthcare that we're seeing today.
Yeah. Well, so tell us a little bit about you, your athletic background, your educational background, stuff like that.
Well, I'm a native of Orange. I was born and raised. I was born at St. Joe's. Went to high school at El Medina High School and played football and ran track there. And went up to Sacramento State and ran track. I was a hurdler in college. And got my degree in undergraduate school in athletic training and sports medicine. And had always had an interest in kind of the running community and early on and gravitated that direction and always had a real interest in sports medicine. And when I graduated from Sacramento State, I came back down here and went to Chapman University and got a master's degree in sports medicine and exercise physiology.
Is that a good school for that?
It's a great school.
I know it's a great school. I don't actually know what their specialties are there.
They have grown through the years, and they're from a sports medicine perspective now, they're really known for their physical therapy school, and they're known for obviously their business school, and they have a very strong athletic training education program as well. And we actually get a number of students that come through our clinic that are students at Chapman. So after I finished my master's, I had the opportunity to work with a variety of professional teams. I was up at the director of exercise physiology at Sentinel Hospital right after the 84 Olympics.
Fun.
And that was a lot of fun. You know, I had a chance to work with the old Rams when they were still in town, and the Lakers when they were back-to-back world champions, and with Magic and Kareem and that whole group. And
wow, that had to be exciting.
It was fun. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I ended up back at Chapman, interestingly enough, as a professor, and taught for 10 years at Chapman in the kinesiology department, and taught kinesiology and prevention and treatment of athletic injuries, and worked with the student athletic trainers a little bit. And so that was kind of where, when I started my private practice in physical therapy, I really was looking at how we can address the recreational/adult athlete without necessarily having them, you know, having to go to a physician every time their knee's a little sore, or at least providing some opportunities for treatment. And when we started SCAR, that was really a focus. Was, you know, there's a large triathlon community. And that triathlon community tends to get dinged up. And, you know, it's usually overuse. It's usually chronic. It's usually a mechanical problem. Just like if your bike's not tuned, you know, you start to wear things out. You know, you need a cable here and there. Same thing happens with your tendons and your ligaments. So, you know, so we really looked at things from a mechanical perspective and developed some programs that are fairly unique in terms of, you know, not necessarily having to go to the physician every time you have that little ding. You know, you have a membership, you come in and you get treated.
So it is a membership type facility? And are they working out, or is treatment part of the membership?
We have a program. We have multiple programs. We do have a fitness center, where people can be a member and come in and work out. We have a program for competitive adult athletes. We call it the SCIP program, Sports Conditioning Injury Prevention. And that program...
That one I like.
Yeah.
I like that a lot better than SCAR. SCIP, yeah, okay. That conjures up a whole different sort of image. SCAR is a...
I know. Yeah,
but SCAR was there before you were, and SCIP is something that you created.
So, exactly. Yeah. That's the story I'm sticking with.
Okay. Sorry to remember.
The SCIP program we really wanted to look at was how do triathletes in the community have access to a collegiate type athletic training room where they could come in and say, hey, my knee's a little sore today. And that's really kind of the preface. It's, we have certified athletic trainers that will look at and assess and treat, and if need be, they can pull a physical therapist over and say, hey, can you guys take a look at this? And then design a treatment program that's appropriate for that athlete. Hmm. They can come in, the athlete then can come in and do their either preventative exercise program or treatment program, to address the knee pain or the ankle pain or the shin pain that they, or the shoulder pain, that they have going on.
Yeah.
And if they need, if they need additional follow-up or they need a little bit more than what an athletic trainer or a physical therapist can do, we help to guide them to the physician that isn't going to say, oh, take 8 weeks off. Oh, your foot hurts a little bit, just take 8 weeks off. Well, and I know that there's not a whole lot of triathletes out there that take 8 weeks off. There's not a whole lot of them that take 8 hours off.
I'm sort of at the end of my 8 weeks off. I did Ironman Louisville, I don't even know, maybe it was 6 weeks ago, and I haven't been doing much training, but it has nothing to do with injuries or anything. It just has to do with burnout. It's a whole different thing. But yeah, so... all right, so that's got to be a huge, growing part of the business. The adult, competitive athlete, because it just seems like, this Komen Race for the Cure. I don't know how many athletes they had there, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were 20,000 people there. I mean, it just grows every year, and the sport of triathlon is growing every year, and it just, there's just more and more people that are getting, into competitive athletics. So I would think that you're probably in a pretty good place because of that.
Well, I think we provide an opportunity for people to get better. We provide an opportunity for people to bridge a gap of a knowledge gap where they sort of know what to do from a training perspective. They know they need to swim. And there's great swim coaches. They know they need to run. There's great run coaches, and they know that they need to cycle, and there's great people that'll fit them on the bike and help them train on the bike, and there's great triathlon coaches that can do all of it together. But what a lot of things that is missing in that piece is when the training doesn't fit. And so we kind of look at things from a functional perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We look at things from from an exercise physiology perspective. We've got a number of our members that are getting ready for Ironman Arizona right now. We've got one of our members that just got to Kona yesterday, so she qualified for her second year that she's qualified it for Kona.
Who is it? Maybe I know her.
Erin Gilmer.
Don't know her.
We're excited for Erin. She's well prepared and excited to be there, and we're excited to be able to support her. So, it's one of those things where what seems to be missing in many training programs is the functional strength component, and that's what leads to overuse problems. And so we really look at the athlete from, what are they missing? Where are they tight? Where are they weak? And let's address that from a functional perspective. So it's not about how much you can bench press or how much you can squat, but it's really how stable are you in every direction that you have to move. So we kind of we look at that in the planes of motion, so to speak. And you know, we can move forward and back, and we can move side to side, and we can rotate. But how well can you do all those things with stability and without leaking energy? So, you know, you're trying to maximize the amount of force every time your foot hits the ground. Well, some of it's leaking out through your hip because your hip's not stable.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to run as fast. So it's not just injury prevention. It's not just injury treatment. It's also performance. And looking at how we can improve performance by improving function. You know, I'm not here to say that, you know, we're going to turn you into the best swimmer in the world. There's great swim coaches that can do that. But if I can give you the opportunity to have the best functional strength, so now your swim coach can translate that into a more efficient swim stroke, you can swim a lot faster with a lot less energy and come out of the water, you know, further along with more reserves.
Yeah, well, that's what we all want, you know, particularly, you know, us long distance guys. I race all distances, but, you know, primarily an Ironman athlete now. And any place you can just shave a little bit of energy, you know, is greatly appreciated, because, you know, being on your feet for, you know, in my case, 11 hours it's a long time to be moving. So if you can find any little leaks that, as you mentioned, you know, that'd be great. So explain to me then, and of course, I'm not telling you something you don't already know, but us triathletes hate strength training. You know, we always feel like we've got to swim, bike, run, and beyond that, you know, at some point we need to sleep and eat and spend a little bit of time with our families. So strength training is pushed off the table right away. But let's assume that, you know, you've got an Ironman distance triathlete, I don't know, let's say he's 55 years old and he's pretty competitive in his age group.
About 11 hours or so?
around 11 hour Ironman. Just missed Kona twice qualifying this year. Let's say you got this guy and, you know, every once in a while I had these niggling little issues, but, you know, nothing major, thankfully, for a while. But, so what do you, let's say we're getting together for the first time and I'm not complaining about any particular problem. Do you do some sort of assessment of my strength, or how do we get started so you know how to address my needs?
That's a great question, and it leads to you know, hours and hours of discussion. But
you got 5 minutes.
The beauty of what we try to accomplish is on day one we do a functional movement screen, and so we really look at not just how strong you are in any given direction. I don't really care how much you can knee extend, you know, or how much you can leg press, because that's not really very functional.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to look at how well your hips and your knees and your core work together. And so with this, through a movement screen, we can identify areas that you would have some functional weakness, perhaps some tightness, some motion loss in certain joints. And based on that, we can then design an appropriate strength training program. Most triathletes that come into our office that, you know, that are just like you, you know, that are, you know, I'm pretty good. You know, I don't have really too many dings. But, you know, sometimes I get fatigued. Sometimes my knee's a little sore. But, you know, I'm getting through everything. I'm getting my workouts in. And what we will typically identify is pretty substantial weakness through hip stabilizers and through kind of the transverse plane, the rotational core component. And so once we make that identification, does that mean that we need to do a bunch of leg press or a bunch of knee extensions and a bunch of hamstring curls? Well, probably not, because that's not where the problem is.
Mm.
So I like to look at a season, just like most triathletes will look at, and say, okay, at what point in the season are we? you know, ideally you're coming to see me now after you're 6 weeks out from your last Ironman. And we designed a program that's ideal for your off season, which was probably going to be a little bit more time intensive than it would be in the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say time intensive, I'm talking 3 hours a week.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've got on my training plan, 3 hours a week.
And now the 3 hours a week doesn't mean that we're going to be lifting for 3 hours. Lifting, you know, in fact, I don't even like to use the term weightlifting.
Yeah.
Because we're really not lifting weights per se. We're doing strength training.
And, yeah.
You know, and I do a lot of, we do a lot of things with a ball or with a suspension trainer.
Bands
to kind of look at that. And again, it comes down to what's the goal of training. So is the goal to address a postseason injury? Is the goal to increase your strength? Is our goal to increase your power? Or is our goal to increase your strength endurance? And those all have kind of different connotations.
Mm-hmm.
And they get inserted into the season at different times. So early on, we want to do strength. Then we want to work on power as we get closer to the season. So you start to develop more power through your pedal stroke, for example, or more power as you have to, you know, get up and over a hill on the run. And then we want to work as you approach your A race. We want to approach, you know, we want to really, you know, address your strength endurance. So you maintain that strength repeatedly over time and over time. So the reps and the sets will vary depending on what the goal is for the period of time that we're training. So to make a short story long, that's kind of, you know, we really need to look at what's the goal for the training period, and then addressing your physiological systems appropriately. No different than what you're doing on the bike or the run or the swim. But as you get closer to your Ironman race, you know, you're talking 20 hours of training a week. There's not room for 3 hours of strength training.
It's hard, yeah.
So typically, you know, with the group of people I've got training for Arizona right now, they're down to 25 to 30 minute sessions a week for their strength. And it's really about maintaining what they developed in the preseason.
So you keep them working right up until race day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Again, thinking about what we're trying to accomplish physiologically.
Yeah.
No different than the run, no different than the bike. And your strength training is really geared towards improving your run and improving your bike and improving your swim. So when they start to see a big change in those, they buy into the strength training real quick, because they're not hanging out in a gym, you know, next to the guy squatting 400 pounds. That's not the appropriate type of strength training for triathletes.
Yeah. So besides, you know, doing this assessment and you know, this first meeting or whatever, do you counsel with your athletes and find out what their specific goals and objectives are? Do you find out, you know, what their limiters are or what they think their limiters are? Because in my case, it's very clear. You know, I'm out of the water with, I'm usually first or second out of the water with the guys in my age group. So I'm cutting back on my swimming dramatically this coming season. My biggest limiter is the bike, you know. So do I come to you and say, you know, hey, I need help with the bike, particularly climbing hills? Everybody's passing me, you know, climbing hills. Do we factor that into this plan that you developed for me, or is it more looking at, I mean, do you put me on my bike and are you looking at me and saying, oh gee, your left knee's kind of flaring out, we need to do this to strengthen that? Or,
well, you know, and when it comes to looking at people on the bike, I think that there are some phenomenal bike fitters. There's some guys that I like to use, and I don't want to mess up what they do. There's also good people that you probably have a guy that you are real comfortable with for your bike fit.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm seeing him tomorrow.
There you go. And I'm not interested in changing your bike fit.
Okay.
What I'm interested in, I may look at you on your bike, but I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say about what you're doing on your bike.
Okay.
I will gain more information from you telling me what your goals are and where you feel your weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm.
That allows me to go back and kind of look and see from, again, from that movement screen where you might, why you might be having those concerns.
Okay.
You know, I'll look at your running, you know, when we get to the running component, I'll, you know, we'll do more from a running analysis perspective than I will from a bike fit. And again, because I think that there are people that are very good at fitting bikes, much better than me.
Yeah. And what do you find when you're looking at people running? I mean, are you finding, you know, heel strike, people bouncing up and down too much? I mean, what?
Well, it's interesting. When you start looking at injury rates, and I gave a talk the other night to a group of runners, and the question I had for them, what sports have the highest incidence of injury? Running, football, wrestling, girls soccer. Which one is the one with the highest number of injuries?
Well, I read somewhere, and this is a while ago, but the percentage of NFL football players in the course of a season, what percentage get injured? It's 100%. So I would guess football, but because it's probably runners, but I don't think 100% of runners get injured over any particular year. But
when you look at athletic exposures,
yeah,
there's in per 1,000 athletic exposures,
there is
about a 2 to 3 time greater incidence of injury with runners than there is with football.
Yeah.
Now the difference is the type of injury. So 100% of the NFL football players are going to get hurt because they're running pretty fast and they're hitting each other pretty hard.
Yeah.
And runners aren't, they may be running fast, but they're typically not running into each other. So the types of injuries that we see in running tend to be overuse injuries.
Yeah.
And there's probably the greatest amount of controversy right now is, should you have a high frequency? Should you change someone's running technique? Is it effective? Is it increased? Does it decrease risk for injury? Does it increase, decrease performance? And there's an interesting study that is about to be published. I was able to look at the preliminary data recently. Large group, lab in Wisconsin, and runners with knee injuries, knee pain. That was the criteria, runners with knee pain. All they did was self-selected speed on a treadmill, changed their frequency, their stride frequency from their natural self-selected stride frequency to about 90 to 92 strides per minute.
Mm-hmm.
So they shortened their stride length, increased their frequency. Statistically significant change in symptoms on the first trial.
So they're overstriding.
So typically what I see is a runner that's going to be at that 80, 82 strides per minute. I encourage them to try to bring that down a little bit, shorten the stride length for a couple of reasons. One is it's a little bit more efficient in theory. And two, you're not flying as long. And if you're not flying as long, you're not hitting with as much impact. You're not hitting with as much impact, you're not driving as much ground reaction forces back up through your foot, ankle, knee, hip. 8 or 9% of the time when I address that issue with an injured runner or triathlete in their running component, you know, I shorten their stride length a little bit, you know, they get back to running quicker. And then it's just a matter of does that become a new learned motor pattern? You know, because at first, you know, your heart rate's higher, you know, you're expending more energy. It's like, well, I don't want to do this. It's harder. I'm out of breath. But I think what happens is as you learn that new motor pattern, your heart rate comes back down. It becomes more efficient. And, you know, you become, you know, you can maintain that intensity, that duration with less impact.
So what do you make of, are you familiar with pose running and chi running methods? What do you make of all that? I read this all the time, as a matter of fact. I don't know. Have you picked up that book, Iron War? by Matt Fitzgerald about Dave Scott and Mark Allen?
I haven't. I've talked to Matt about it, but I haven't read that that one. I have not read. I've read his most recent Mind Body.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Matt and I need to get together and talk about that. But this book, Iron War, is about, you know, the 1989 face-off and Kona between Mark Allen and Dave Scott. For those of you that don't know who Mark Allen and Dave Scott are, if you're in the sport of triathlon, you need to know who these guys are, because they both won Kona 6 times each. There's still plenty of people out there that don't know who they are. In fact, I was a little detour here. I was at the Challenge Athletes Foundation race down in La Jolla a couple of years ago, and Mark Allen came out to do the swim portion on one of the Challenge Athletes teams. First time he'd competed in, I don't even know how many years, 20 years or whatever it was since he retired. And he was walking through the crowd just like he was totally anonymous. It's like, here's the legend of, you know, a legend in this sport, and nobody even recognized who he was. But anyway, in there they talk about Dave Scott. I don't know if you've ever seen Dave Scott run, but he is an ugly, ugly runner. And, you know, and I've heard this more than once that, you know, it's really not, you know, your running gait is your running gait. That's what God gave you, and that's how you're going to run. And I was having some problems with my Achilles, and I went to see a podiatrist, and he's a runner. He's a marathon runner. You know, which is one of the reasons why I went to see him. He's here in Irvine. And I talked to him about chi and pose. He says, that's a bunch of crap. Just run how you run. If your heels strike naturally, then just, you know, just let it go. So I never know where to fall in this stuff. And, you know, one of the local coaches here, a friend of mine, Mike Collins, is a pose running method guy. And he's, I think, certified at the 4th level, whatever that means. But, you know, it seems like that theory has got some credence to it, because it helps get you over your feet so you're not heel striking and you're more balanced. But I don't know. What's your opinion on this whole subject?
You know, it's a great question, and it's a great opportunity for long discussions that probably don't go a whole lot of places.
You got 5 minutes.
I seem to get 5 minutes all the time. You know, the when I look at changing someone's technique, someone's pattern, I'm looking at it in terms of changing it for sake of reducing a load on and reducing the risk of injury or improving an injury component. There are very, very few studies that support changing running position or running gait pattern to improve performance. Now, there's a lot of studies that will show improved mechanics as a result of running exercises. You know, A skips and B skips and you know, climbing on the treadmill, those types of, you know, those, you know, specific exercises geared towards improving turnover. But there's really nothing that says if you do this pose method, you'll run faster. Mm. Now, having said that, you know, I look at trying to get people to stay more relaxed. So I think there's a happy medium in there. I know certain people, when they start their pose program, about 3 weeks later, they come into the clinics, they've got Achilles tendonitis. Mm. That's not everybody. And that might be somebody that starts too aggressively. And, you know, that there's certain methods that will increase the load on patellar tendons and or on Achilles tendons. So people will tend to pick their natural gait because that's the most efficient for them. Mm-hmm. But again, is it the one that's providing the least amount of load? That may not be true.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it. You know, I think you have to be a little careful. And I'm not convinced that you're going to get significant improved performance.
Yeah, but if you can avoid injury, you know, that's that's huge for us. You know,
oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I when I'm in my season, I'm training 7 days a week, you know, and for me to miss a day, let alone a couple of weeks, is, you know, I'm not in a good place, you know, when that happens. So, you know, I'm always interested to hear, you know, things that I can do to avoid injury, if I can, you know, swim, bike, run more efficiently. You know, I'll take a look at those things and try them. And I tried the pose method thing. And when I run, I'm conscious about, you know, my body position and so on. And I videotaped myself and looked at myself on the treadmill. And I don't know if the treadmill is the best place to necessarily videotape yourself. But I've looked at my running gait and what I do and how I hit the ground. And, you know, so I'm conscious of that all the time. And I'm not a great swimmer, biker, or runner, but I'm pretty lucky. I don't get injured very often. But I'm getting older, and we know that, you know, the muscles tend to, you know, deteriorate over time, and you know, the possibility of injury is always greater the longer you are in the sport. So I'm always interested to, you know, to learn about this stuff.
Well, I think when you're talking about reducing your risk for injury, maximizing performance, you know, getting the most that you can out of your training, and you bring up a really good point. As we get older, probably the single most important thing that any triathlete can do is really look at the recovery. And as we get older, I love that term, as we get older, mm-hmm. we need to recover more.
Yeah.
We don't get more fit during the workout. We get more fit during the recovery.
Right.
And if you don't maximize your recovery, you haven't maximized your workout. So a great, you know, 5-hour ride on the bike that you just killed, it was great. And then you don't give your body that recovery time and energy, the quality of that workout just went down to a 3-hour cruise.
Yeah.
And that's where because triathletes love to pound it, it's like, you know, especially long course, you know, they're 5 and 6 and 7 hour workouts. That's where, you know, that's where that recovery becomes so important for reducing your risk for injury. You know, and improving performance.
No, I totally agree, and I coach quite a few athletes, and the athletes that I coach that are over 40, you know, I put them on a 3-week cycle, you know, 2 weeks hard, 1 week easy, so they've got an opportunity to recover, because I totally subscribe to that. I've got, you know, friends of mine that, you know, they train hard 7 days a week, and it's like, when does your body ever have a chance to recover from that, you know? So what, are there any guidelines that, you know, let's say the athlete over 40 in terms of ratios or some sort of guideline that they could follow for recovery? How much recovery versus how much workout or?
Well, I think you need to look at, and what I do is that I have, you know, like I said, I've got a number training for Arizona right now, and they're all over 40, and it's an individual basis. Mm. So I may have a 3-week work cycle, I may have a 4-week work cycle, but it also depends on what the focus is for that cycle, and how they're feeling. I completely changed an entire cycle for one of our girls, simply because she's, you know, I'm a little tired. And being a little tired is not necessarily a good thing. I mean, you're always tired when you're training for an Ironman.
No, it's true.
You wake up, you're tired. You go to bed, you're tired. In the middle of the day, you're tired.
It's true.
So, but there is that fine line of being tired and being fatigued and being on kind of on that brink. And I always use the analogy, you want to be at the line. You want to be over the line, but you want to be at the line. And unfortunately, the line varies from person to person. So to say, for everybody, you need, you know, a a 4 day, you know, a 4 day work with a 1 day recovery. It may be a work day, a recovery day, or it may be a 6 day with a recovery day. Mm. Not a big fan of 7 days in a row, unless it was depending on what you were doing.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing. Do you believe in active recovery? Because that's basically my Mondays are my active recovery days. You know, I'll do a swim in a very easy cycle on Mondays, and that's after, like you said, hammering. I'm beating the crap out of myself Saturday and Sunday. I do brick work on Saturday and Sunday, so it's, you know, it's bike run Saturday, with Saturday being my long bike ride, and then bike run on Sunday, with Sunday being my long run day. But then Monday, easy swim, easy bike.
I think that's fine. Again, depending on what your heart rate's doing throughout the day. Mm. You know, if your heart rate's kind of elevated in the morning, you know, when you roll out of bed and check your heart rate, if it's 10 beats higher than what your normal resting heart rate is, I probably wouldn't even do an active recovery day. I would just
take the day off. Yeah.
So, and it's going to vary from week to week. So that's kind of how, you know, that's my take on it.
But how can you train somebody, though? It's almost like you need to check in with them every day then to figure out.
Well, I typically check in with them twice a week. They come in and do their strength, you know, their strength workouts. And again, they're coming in now, right now, with the race, you know, relatively close. They're coming in for, you know, a half hour of strength stuff. And then one of those days we meet and go over what the next week's race plan is.
Yeah. So you're getting feedback from them constantly.
Exactly.
Yeah, did this workout and, you know, my heart rate was 10 beats higher than the same workout was 2 weeks ago or whatever.
Exactly.
So you can say, okay, we're probably, you might be coming down with a cold. Why don't we back it off, you know, for a couple of days, and then let me know where your heart rate's at then.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's awesome.
So that's what's, you know, that's what's kind of nice about trying to fine tune some things. You know, and I purposely don't train a lot of people. I limit it to a couple, and because I'm treating a lot more.
Well, you're running the business too.
Exactly. So, but that's kind of the approach that we take within the constraints of our business model is we really look at a personalized, we really look at an individualized approach to the whole process.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, off the shelf training plans that you can buy, you know, and I've trained with those, and you know, online training plans, and, you know, there's a wide range. But I suppose it's sort of like, you know, you can go to beginnertriathlete.com and get free training plans.
Right.
You know, it's totally free. You're probably the other end of the scale in terms of cost and personal attention, but you kind of get what you pay for, I think, you know.
Yeah, you know, and I look at what we're trying to accomplish really is really based on what an individual's goals are. You know, I've had people where the goal was, I want to finish under 17 hours. It's my first one.
That's a good goal. Yeah.
It's a great goal.
Yeah.
That's a great goal. You know, and then I've got people whose goals are to qualify for Kona, which is also a great goal.
Yeah. Where were you a year ago? Actually, I was in Kona a year ago. So where were you, you know, like 11 months ago or whatever? Yeah. And I've got to hang out with a lot of people that is their goal, you know, to get to Kona. And I've got other friends of mine. Good friend of mine, Russ Jones, just got back from the World Duathlon competition in Spain and took second, you know. So I've got to hang with some guys that are, and women, that are just amazing athletes, you know. So we're looking for any possible edge that we can get. And, you know, while I think we all try to stay within a budget, you know, we're looking for, you know, whatever it is, you know, and it could be anything. You know, we I know for myself, I said my cycling is my limiter, and it is, but I've seen my cycling get dramatically better from the direction that I got from one of my coaches. And so, I mean, I totally believe in that, and we're all looking for that edge and the way to improve. So, you know, it sounds like, a pretty good model that you guys have got there.
Yeah, you know, it works well for us, and it works well for, you know, again, for our community. And that was our basic foundation was really, you know, we want to help the community. And the triathlon community is just that. It's a great community. And, you know, we look at things, we look at being a great resource. People can come in, and if they're not sure, we'll look at anybody for free. You know, we'll do a free consult. Just give us a call.
Well, I'm there for that.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
And yeah, exactly. We'll come in. I'll do a quick functional screen. We'll look and give you a direction. You know, whether the direction makes sense to be with us or the direction makes sense to be with somebody else. You know, and then the nice thing is we've been around long enough, and we have a nice following. So we really look at our approach as being resource based. It's a tough economy, sure, but we're really there for you. You know, it's not the other way around.
So I live in South County. I'm happy with my gym membership, and maybe some or most of the stuff that you prescribe to your clients don't need a gym, but you're just too far away for me to work with you. Is there something that we can do? Is there still a way for us to work together?
Oh, absolutely.
Even if I'm not in the area? And maybe, you know, because this actually people listen to this podcast around the world. Is there something that they can do to connect with you to get information and direction?
Absolutely. You know, the key ingredient to what we try to accomplish, again, comes down to that functional movement screen. I haven't figured out how to do it online yet.
Okay.
But I'm not far off.
All right.
This is the beauty of being able to watch somebody on Skype, and again, all I need to do is be able to see how you're moving in certain directions.
Mm-hmm.
For you in South County,
yeah, I can come to your place, you know, one time or a couple of times, but I'm not going to be going up there once or twice a week.
Exactly, and which doesn't make sense because again, you're happy with your membership, your gym membership. Although again, most of the stuff that I would have you do, you don't necessarily need to go to a gym if you've got certain things at home. But I would look at having you come up. We would do a movement screen. We would sit down, figure out what your goals are, and I would give you a program. We would go through the program and so you understood what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Okay.
And then I'd send you on your way, and you could follow up on email or you could follow up on the telephone. And at the end of, you know, an 8-week period, I'd probably have you come back.
Okay.
Because again, we look at those periods, you know, where we have certain training goals within that period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not the same program throughout the year.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got people that do that all the time that come in, you know, once every 3 months. I just finished training a physician from Chicago. And he did the marathon, Wisconsin marathon, last weekend, ran a 2:53. And he called me because he was having some calf pain. So I said, you know, Ari, we need to, you know, you're running 7 days a week. We need to cross train. And, you know, I had him down to four runs a week, but, you know, a couple of swims and some cross training and some bikes and some bricks. And, you know, knocks out a 2:53, which I'd be thrilled with. I don't know about you, but...
I'd be out of control. Yeah. I think I need... I think my Boston qualifying time is now 3:45. So, yeah, break in 3 hours. Yeah. It'd be pretty special for me.
So, the key to him, you know, with him was changing what he was doing because he was... you know, too focused on one aspect.
Yeah, he's overtraining.
And, and it was funny, he called me yesterday and said, you know, his race was Sunday, called me yesterday and said, why aren't I should be more sore. I'm not sore at all today.
No, that's amazing after a marathon.
Yeah.
Because I can't walk after, you know, a standalone marathon. That's incredible.
So, yeah, so, you know, he's a bright guy. He's a physician and runs a preventative medicine program in Chicago and gets it. So I think, again, just tweaking the program to meet your individual needs is key. It's not, we get a lot of different types of athletes that come into our clinic. You know, we have professional football players, we have professional soccer players, we have, Olympic gold medalists. But the key is when we get somebody that comes in, regardless of the level, a youth soccer player, when they come in, it's not about the soccer program for them. It's about identifying their functional deficits, creating a program that's specific to them, and then attaching that to their sport.
Mm.
So we have somebody that we have identified the limitations, address that with their exercise program, that then will facilitate success in their sport. So for you to come in and do every exercise that every triathlete does may not be the most effective training method, or for us, the most effective assessment method. We want to figure out where you have those weaknesses and then design your program accordingly so that you can qualify next year.
I qualified last year. I just didn't qualify this year. Just didn't have the luck. But, can you fit me in next week?
I'm sure I could.
All right. I'm coming. I'm serious. This is the time for me because it's, I'm gonna do kind of a, there's a half Ironman, Magic Mountain Man up near Lake Castaic. So I'm going to do that on Sunday. It's more of a training thing. But I've got an assessment that I do for my athletes and for myself, and I'll be doing those next week, and then I'll get into my heavy training the week after that. So it'd be good to come by and kind of be a guinea pig for our listeners and see how it works.
So. One of the things we do, we do VO2 testing as well.
Mm.
So with some of our, some of our athletes will look at max VO2 testing, but quite honestly, and I've done, when I was the director of exercise physiology at Sentinel, that's kind of what I did, was max testing on all those elite athletes. And for an endurance athlete, especially a long course endurance athlete, a max VO2 test is probably not all that critical.
Mm.
What starts to be much more critical is what your oxygen uptake is at any given heart rate, and with an indication of the ratio of the fuels that are being burned. So it's probably more important to see what you're doing at your 7-minute pace or your 8-minute pace on the treadmill, or when you're at 250 watts or 200 watts on the bike. Kind of looking at what your ratio of fuel expenditure is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the stuff that we'll look at as well.
Yeah. Can we do that all in one day?
Yeah.
All right. I'm there. I'm setting that up tomorrow.
Perfect. Perfect. I'd love to have you. We'll be fine.
Okay. Good. Yeah. I'm on a mission now. I changed things up in my training plan last year, as we all do. We kind of look at different options, and it's not for me so much the grass is greener type scenario, but it's just looking, again, for that little incremental improvement. So, we have other folks on this program that talk to us about exercise and nutrition and things like that, and I prescribed all that stuff. It's just tell me more, and then I'll try it, and sometimes some of the stuff will work for me and sometimes it won't, but I love hearing about it and trying it, and we'll be a little guinea pig for our listeners. So
yeah, like I said, it'll be fun, and you'll definitely learn a lot about yourself. You'll find out things that you had no idea, and you'll see how they apply to your training and how they apply to your performance.
Cool. Well, I'm excited. Okay, so tell us now, Jim, how they can reach you.
Website, www.scarpt.com. We're located right in Orange, right off the 55th and 22 freeway.
Okay.
So we're very centrally located. Go to the website and you can get right to me through info@scarpt as well. So encourage everybody to go ahead and take a look at our webpage, see what we're doing. You know, we're there to answer questions. We're there to be a resource. That's why we do free consultations. Try to get you pointed in the right direction. And if it's something that we can do, whether it's an injury and physical therapy is appropriate, we can get you in contact with the physician that's a specialist in the area that you having a problem with. And we usually have a little back door that we can get people in right away.
Good. Hopefully I won't need that this season.
That's the plan.
We'll see. All right, Jim. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Tri Chatter. And we'll see you out there on the race course. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.